This is Healthcare Strategies.
This podcast was recorded remotely due to the coronavirus pandemic. As a result, the quality may be a little lower than our usual standards. We appreciate your patience as we practice social distancing. From all of us at Xtelligent Healthcare Media, stay healthy, stay safe, and enjoy the latest episode of Healthcare Strategies. Hello, and welcome to Healthcare Strategies. I am Kelsey Waddill, editor of healthpayerintelligence.com. Today, we have one of my colleagues, Jessica Davis, here with us to discuss password protection in the healthcare industry. Jessica is the senior editor of healthitsecurity.com. She has been with Xtelligent for 2 years now. Before joining the Xtelligent team, Jessica served as the lead editor of cybersecurity, government, health IT, and women in health IT for Healthcare IT News, after 9 years of freelance writing and editing. We'll be chatting today about the perilous world of the dark web and how healthcare organizations can better arm themselves against credential theft by protecting their passwords. Thanks for coming on today, Jessica.
Hey, thanks for having me, Kelsey. Definitely strange to be on this side of the microphone.
Sure, yeah. So just sort of diving right in, what are some of the risks that healthcare organizations need to be aware of when it comes to forming their passwords? So how do hackers tend to access that information, and what kind of damage can they inflict with it?
Now, the healthcare sector isn't necessarily unique when it comes to password challenges. Across all industries, users remain the biggest weakness when it comes to defending the enterprise. And a lot of that stems from hackers preying on those natural instincts, but it also boils down to user habits. The majority of people reuse their passwords across both personal and work accounts, and data shows that's a huge issue. For example, a Digital Shadows report showed there are at least 15 billion stolen credentials for sale on the dark web, stolen from 100,000 separate breaches, and 5 billion of those were unique credential sets, and that's a staggering number. And now if you add that data from Kella, which found a hacker leaked the usernames and passwords as well as IP addresses for more than 900 Pulse secure virtual private networks in plain text on a Russian-speaking dark web forum. I could list dozens of these stats, but when combined with the recent Homeland Security alert that showed hackers are using stolen credentials like these to compromise vulnerabilities, you know, even when an organization has applied a patch, and that's what you have is a massive risk. You know, data has shown that unsecured databases are found by hackers in just minutes.
Wow.
So it goes to show that policies, healthcare, and even other sectors are making this much too easy for the cyber criminals.
Yeah. So it seems like, I mean, to the untrained individual, it seems like the easiest way to like preserve yourself would be for healthcare organizations to create very long and complicated passwords that are impossible for hackers to predict, right?
Well, you know, it would seem like that's the case, and many have made that claim in the past. But I spoke with Troy Young with Advanced MD recently, and that's not really the solution. Hackers have automated tools that are able to run in the background and check all possible password combinations. And often those are based on common mistakes like users using 1, 2, 3, 4 or other common combinations within minutes. He also explained that it's more about complexity than length, employing passphrases that are much more difficult to guess. But all of the complexity in the world can't help when users are leveraging the same exact password from multiple accounts. Yeah. So, for example, like those stolen credentials that are posted online, right? A hacker grabs those. They then, you know, plug them into all of the known accounts of this user and finds a way into the network. It's really that simple. The biggest mistake of all, as noted many times by the majority of security leaders and researchers, is not putting multi-factor authentication on every applicable endpoint. Microsoft actually found that MFA blocks 99.9% of automated cyber attacks. I mean, that more than makes the case for its use, and yet we still see breach notifications where providers are responding to a successful hack on their system and then employing MFA. Mm-hmm. So just think about that. We know it works, and healthcare providers are still continuing to employ a reactive security posture to a problem that really needs to be proactive. Yes, resources and staffing issues are huge challenges, but it costs so much more to react to an event than to prevent one from occurring in the first place. Troy Young also stressed that the need for password management system or a password vault that both automates the highly complicated, hard to guess passwords in the system, and they're honestly one of the most secure and effective tools that you can use for this. It's, you know, it's random and very, very hard to crack.
Can you go into what a password vault is and kind of what that would look like?
Yeah, so password vaults, they're either a tool, I mean, you can actually see them on many of your online accounts, right? So, for example, when you're using your phone and you try to create a new account, right? It will ask you, do you want your Samsung device to create a password for you? And then it stores it, right? So there are already tools equipped on your phone and device that employ this technology, right? Where they generate this randomly complex password using numbers and letters. You don't even have to remember it. It then creates this password for you and puts it in a vault. There are actual platforms that organizations can purchase to then have that technology on every place where a user logs in, right? And therefore you're using a different complex, hard to decrypt password on every single endpoint that the user is not required to remember, but it also keeps it secure for you.
Wow. So why doesn't every healthcare organization use multi-factor authentication and password vaults for protecting themselves? What's holding them back? And what are some of the, you know, perceived or actual challenges around implementing that?
Well, as noted in a recent SANS Software Security Institute report, the two main obstacles that organizations will say hinder them from implementing MFA is this misconception that implementing the tool will require an external hardware device and concerns that it will disrupt users or cause the technology to malfunction. But even those researchers says that those just sound like more like excuses. There are plenty of technologies and policies that can enforce stronger authentication within the enterprise. And quite simply, there isn't an excuse. It doesn't need to be an all or nothing implementation. Ideally, an enterprise can do it all at once. The Vanderbilt University Medical Center in 2018 announced that they were going to launch this huge MFA project. They did it in a staggered effect, beginning with different departments and first educating the users on what would be needed and taking that step-by-step approach, getting the users on board to then implement this extra technology piece, which basically is using your credentials, yes, but then asking you a follow-up question that really only the user can guess, not that a hacker could sit and randomly generate in the amount of time needed to fill in that blank. So getting the users on board and then slowly implementing the process. So healthcare providers can employ a different approach of role-based, where, you know, you begin with the administrators and those privileged accounts, securing those which are most targeted by hackers. And that will ensure the least amount of disruption. Begin at the top and then move to the bottom. A phased or a systems-based approach can begin with externally facing systems and then employ it first for those privileged users again to make the process work. The point is you have to start somewhere. And given the sophistication of threats, there really are no valid excuses for not taking some kind of action. You want to approach the process by first speaking to some of your vendors that you already are contracted with to see if they offer MFA. If not, you can ask them who they work with for these things, because again, MFA is incredibly common and people that are most secure use MFA. So they're going to have those things. You can also speak with other organizations within your network that you already have partnerships with to see who they're using. And researchers have discussed with me in the past that it's really helpful if you work with an IT specialist to ensure you are properly configured for the infrastructure that you currently operate on, and to make sure that these logins that you're creating are effective. Erin Benson, who works with LexisNexis, she has also recommended that when organizations are considering products and vendors, that they choose one with a good perspective of the fraud universe and varying types of fraud potential. You can also leverage a consultant who can help you choose the tools for consistent use cases, such as fraud attacks or ransomware or someone pretending to be someone with a fake ID. And you want to make sure that you have also use a vendor that really has a suite of products that can be tailored to fraud and also to your type of enterprise. And you want to balance user engagement, meaning less friction for the user as possible, with protecting the cybersecurity of your infrastructure.
While we have you here, what are some other trends that you're seeing in health IT, in the health IT security space in 2020 so far? I mean, it's definitely been an odd year, to say the least.
Well, in the first part of the year, obviously, hackers are really focused on preying on fears in COVID-19 and, you know, targeting those supply chain and really launching an abundance of phishing and fraud emails. But we didn't see a lot of reported incidents. And a lot of that could be that when I spoke with researchers in the past, a lot of that was some hackers really look for the email or IRL that essentially demonstrates that they're on an enterprise, like they've reached a valuable target. And so with all the remote working, they may not have found that. So, and it could just be that they're waiting for the right time to deploy the malware or the malicious payload. But what we're seeing in the last few months, those attacks really died down by May. It's not that they stopped existing, it's just that they weren't as frequently used. And what we've seen, especially in the last month or two, ransomware has really come back with a vengeance. And not even necessarily come back, the attacks were continuing the frequency of those heightened levels of 2019, but the reported successful events have been staggering. Double ransomware, which is where hackers will gain a foothold onto a network and lie in wait, collecting data, stealing it, proliferating to other endpoints that are connected to it, and then later deploying the ransomware payload when the time is right. And when they don't pay, they post that data online and continue to try and extort them just to guarantee the most payment. That's happened to at least a dozen providers in the last 2 months. And what we've seen even in this week alone, where there's a massive ransomware attack on Universal Health Services, where it's one of the largest health systems in the US with 400 locations. And a majority of those have been impacted by this with IT outages and are operating on EHR downtime right in the middle of COVID, which is a huge problem. And hackers are back with these more sophisticated attacks where they're actually really taking the time to target the organizations to ensure a better payload. And frankly, they have no scruples. We may all be responding to this massive pandemic, but there is no honor among thieves. There was even the last 2 or 3 weeks ago, a patient's death was directly related to a ransomware attack. Computer systems were all down, they were diverted, and she died in transit. So, like, think about that. Like, hackers have reverted to, you know, even deploying malicious payload through phishing emails again, and it's stressing that the need for MFA and better access controls. And as you and I discussed briefly before the call, the Treasury Department just alerted agencies to a move that may sanction companies that are facilitating these ransomware payments if the hackers that they're paying are on the sanction list, and it, as they may fuel nation state activities. And with data showing that just 44% of providers conform with NIST standards, which is similar to last year's data point, a lack of progress is a sign of regression, because it's time to take action, because the hackers aren't waiting for us to catch up.
You mentioned there some governmental activity on this subject. I just wondered, if are there any steps that the federal government or state governments are taking against this increased activity?
Well, I will say that the Department of Homeland Security, Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency has been near weekly, if not multiple times during the week, releasing alerts on the malware strands they're seeing, the phishing attacks they're seeing, who's being targeted. I know last week they even said that one of the federal agencies was successfully hacked by a nation state actor. So they're being incredibly transparent. I know that even the National Security Agency has also been working to be more transparent about their efforts to inform all sectors of ongoing threats and what people need to be aware of, especially given the fact that many of these attacks lie in wait and they are not easy to detect. They evade security tools. And given all of these things, these evasive techniques and sophistication, they're really attempting to inform the private sector organizations of threats to better equip them, because clearly they're distracted by responding to a pandemic. And I mean, this is definitely one of those times where more collaborative effort is needed to really both source resources and things like that, and also really provide that educational aspect and insights that are needed to defend against these complex attacks.
Thank you, Jessica, so much for coming on the podcast today.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is actually pretty fun.
Great. And for our listeners, what strategies have you found to be effective against credential theft? Tell us your story by sharing this episode on Twitter and tagging us at @securityhit. We'll be interested in hearing your thoughts. Thank you.
This has been an Xtelligent Healthcare Media production.